Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, my radio listeners. You're getting it right with Dr. Velva Bowles. I hope you are having a fantastic Thursday afternoon. Yesterday, having been Veterans Day, is always a heavy time for me for a number of reasons, but I got through it, and I've talked to associates who are both veterans and those who are family of veterans. And it is so important to have a reason to celebrate people who do things for you. The whole concept of gratitude and appreciation is so important. I coined a phrase not too long ago that I shared with a friend where I said, I've come to a point in my life where I want to be appreciated and not just tolerated. That comment came from so many injustices. And I have visited with various people, talked to learned people, talked to spiritual people, talked to those who are life coaches. And most of the conversation ultimately comes to know yourself, be true to yourself, and keep moving forward. And those are important lessons. They're very, very good advice. I had a conversation today where I shared some of the vicissitudes that I've had in trying to become a professional person in this United States and some of the roadblocks that are put in my path. And as much as I try not to focus on it as being perpetrated because of skin color, it generally comes down to that. I have been talking for several weeks, sometimes with a compadre, sometime alone, on the topic of social injustice or social justice. And the happenings over the last few days, I guess since November 4th, since I've started picking up on some of the momentum that I see building, is that I've been told by a number of very wise people, much brighter than I, that if you live long enough, you will see repeats. And I feel like that's happening now. When I was in undergraduate school, which would have been the 70s and the 80s, I did go to a what they call majority school, North Carolina State University. At that time, it was called white bread because there weren't very many black students, and the recruitment of black athletes was not as high as it is today. My memory serves, I was in a female dormitory that housed 1,200 women, of which there were three of us, three black women and 1,200 people. And you can see that statistically is extremely low. And I have many, many stories of what I call surprise attacks. I never was so sensitive to black and white. I certainly did not know there was a hatred or a repulsive on the part of some white Americans, just the very idea of sharing a room, which I experienced, or those who felt so superior they'd offer to pray for me since God preferred them over me. I was actually told that. What I'm seeing happening now, if you're following what's going on in Missouri, I think it's two universities, University of Missouri and another university there in Missouri. Slowly, the news media, I don't know whether it's student-run media, I haven't seen it on AP release, and I haven't seen the Wall Street Journal, but I've seen it in a number of newspapers, and maybe because Facebook has exploded and tells the story, and there's a number of student internet newspapers and so forth, the whole concept of hate, I don't know another word. I pause because I'm trying to find a better word. The incident that took place at an Applebee's where a white American female became enraged because there was a woman who is a nationalized now American citizen sat with her family and spoke in her native tongue from Africa. And this white American female was so enraged that she slashed the lady in the face with a beer mug. And they showed pictures of how badly lacerated her lower lip and her nose. And the offense was speaking while black, I guess would be what the modern jargon would say. And the lady was arrested, and they're saying, well, we're probably going to charge you with a race crime. I've talked to you about the situation in Charleston, unfortunately, so long ago, relatively so long ago, where a young man drove from Columbia down to Charleston and ended up killing 9 people during a church service. And he was a young white male who came in and did his slaughter in this black church. The question that I found myself asking is, when you hear the politicians and you hear the tour guides and you hear all of the spin on this great American country with all our wonderful national parks and things for tourism to come and see New York and see this and see the Grand Canyon, because we are a wonderful country, and we minimize the concept of the hostilities and guns, and we demonize certain groups that, oh, shootouts, that would be in a ghetto setting. That would be drive-by, black drug-type killings. And what we're finding is that is not true anymore. And because the reporting is no longer left to the national newspapers, we get the reporting on Twitter, we get the reporting in phone photos on Facebook, and suddenly it appears that a lot of the shooting and killing are white young men shooting up schools or bringing knives to school. It's not the idea of just this thug, as unfortunately President Obama used in the description of the Baltimore riots just recently. It is these polished young men who no one expected. And what gets me is every time they start to present the story of this person did this shooting, they preface it with an entire psychological evaluation. Was he in a single family? Was he loved? Did he grow up in a nice home and so forth? You don't hear the same language used to describe the person who did the shooting, and they use the word suspect instead of thug, and they use terms that describe some kind of social deprivation rather than an aggressive personality. And I've been sensitive to this many years, and colleagues of mine, a good friend, I commemorate him, he died 2 years ago, was very active in getting social justice here in Central Louisiana, attending school board meetings and council meetings, and being a host of a radio show and writing an article on the front page of newspaper. I've always been sensitive, but I don't know that we've always been listening. And it's almost as if the 60-somethings and the 50-somethings and the 40-somethings are just burnt out. We blacks who are in that age group either say we've heard it all, we've seen it all, or we're comfortable how we are and we don't want anyone to rock the boat. And there's just kind of this inertia. We don't do anything. We don't seem to be alarmed into action, and that seems to be what's necessary. Unfortunately, in too many black movements, there's an alarm into action. I look at the Emmett Till story, which a very courageous young reporter is slowly getting together, and I hope to see it when he releases it. And it is a horrendous story of a 15-year-old boy who was brutally killed purportedly for whistling at a white female in a rural southern town during the time of civil rights movement. When some very horrendous thing happened, boom, there was some motivation to march. There's some reason to do this or that. Now, at the Million Man March in Washington, D.C., there is a number of grassroots groups that are reawakening, and it's exciting to me. It's kind of like you feel the vibration if you've ever watched an egg hatch. You know that it's something going to come out of that shell, but you don't see it immediately. You hear a little chipping, or you feel a little chirping, and then you see the egg start to crack. Well, that's how I'm feeling. I'm getting that kind of anticipation because the 20-somethings, those who are looking to the future for another 40 years of living and procreating and building their future, are starting to question the status quo. Why is it all right in Missouri for someone to drive by and have racial slurs yelled out of a window when there's a black American graduate student rocking across campus? Why is it even a thought to enter into a dormitory setting and smear feces? This is what gets me, that someone who would feel that they have to bring in feces to mark a wall in a swastika symbol. Not paint, but feces. It almost shows you the level of the person who's perpetrating this particular crime. Maybe they think feces is showing how much they hate the Black Americans that they are targeting with that symbol, but it says to me, how deprived are you as a human being that you find that your writing substance should be fecal matter? That just, I don't even know how you approach that kind of thinking or how you can even be of that nature. With all of that said, let me just address my marquee. Social injustice or just racism? As some of our 20-somethings are saying, we've had enough. And the actions in Missouri where a young graduate student went on a hunger strike, that didn't draw anything. And I said, yep, Dick Gregory did that. He probably holds the record for how long he went without eating. He just became almost a total skeleton. And I don't know exactly, I'm sorry I didn't do the research, to know what was the outcome of Dick Gregory's fast, but his went on for just an interminable amount of time. I can remember as a younger, much younger woman praying and we holding vigils that Dick Gregory was able to hang on and didn't die because it didn't look like his extreme gesture was even motivating any kind of change. And obviously here we are some 50 years later in the same tactics of fasting to get attention, marching to get attention, or is reoccurring 50 years later. Martin Luther King died in 1964. We're talking 2015, and the same tactics, the same need for those tactics are in place. I was, however, very impressed that the Black American football player says, okay, you don't care, I got a brother, they're not eating, and he can starve to death. How about we don't go to practice, and we don't go on the field? What got me is how quickly the whole concept of loss of funds, when it said it would cost the university $1 million for them not to play these structured, organized games, it made me smile because it was the boycotting of the buses in the South during the Civil Rights Movement that we got the attention of those who was so very oppressive to the groups that were trying to get some attention. So maybe, just maybe, if the 20-somethings are starting to wake up, if that egg is starting to vibrate and the sounds within that egg are getting louder, you may have just hit upon it. Marching doesn't really matter. That's old school. Fasting, it says a social statement, but who cares if you starve yourself to death, if they would just as soon choke you with a chokehold or tase you so many times that your heart stops. Your dying is little motivation for social justice. But finance, if the Black American football players refuse to play and the universities who have benefited so grossly from winning and having all the fanfare, the football jerseys and paraphernalia that goes along with it, suddenly they lose that. There's an leverage in there. So I call out in this conversation, okay, 20-somethings, you are the high-tech generation. You are those who have not had to suffer. I've talked to a number of colleagues who have some 20-somethings, even some 30-somethings, where their whole venue when they were working is they didn't want the child to want for anything. When I was growing up, in order to get any extra money, if we ever got extra money, we'd go pick cotton. Yep, North Carolina, you'd get this sack made out of burlap, and you'd go out into a cotton field. And my father of the generation where picking cotton was actually not just a job, it was a lifestyle because his family was a sharecropper. It was amazing how he could pick cleaner than a machine. He's 6'4", and he'd have to go on his knees because a cotton plant is probably 3.5 to 4 feet tall, and it would be just burdensome for him to bend for the time it would take him to go from one end of a row to another because rows, I don't know the actual turn off of a row, as they would say, but I'd say it was a good eighth of a mile you stand at one end as a child, and I couldn't see the end. I remember running between the rows and literally running for some time to go and get a bucket of water to bring back to serve, because that was a child's duty that was in the cotton field. If you weren't strong enough to pull those sacks, you could go and be the water person. And I remember seeing my dad go down on his knees between rows and pick two rows of cotton simultaneously, and I mean every bit of cotton out of those horrible coals. If you've ever picked cotton, there's a sharp end to some of the bow where the cotton is, and you can cut your fingers if you don't know what you're doing or if your fingers are not heavily calloused. And I can remember him moving along with that heavy sack dragged between his legs, thrown over his shoulder, and his picking cotton and picking it up out of the dirt and picking it off the plant and just making it. As he moved along, you start with seeing cotton, something white, and suddenly it's just brown because he would have picked it very clean. Likewise, when we got to the age where we wanted to go to the fair and we needed some money, and $2 is a lot of money for my family because Dad had 8 children and he was making minimum wage, he would take us where we could earn some money. Peaches, and so forth. And as we got older, my sister had other tasks. But my point is, children of my generation never had to endure what many Black American children, because there was one time, for those who don't know the history, public school released Black children at a certain time because the farmer would tell the principal, I need them in my cotton field. So your education schedule was set not by your parents, but by your farm associate. And when they said sharecropping, it was just I guess, one step from slavery. But that's how it was done, and I am right at the tail end of it. I wasn't heavily under it. I was able to go to school, and I definitely got my training. But my parents spoke of it. My grandparents spoke of it, and I am aware of it. Well, the generation of now, my 20-somethings, haven't done that. They haven't picked cotton, I dare say. They haven't picked peaches. I talked to a young lady talking about chicken because my father, again, because we were poor, we would buy what's called a spent hen. And for those who don't know, a hen lays eggs until a certain age, and then she stops laying eggs. Well, farmers don't want to feed what doesn't give something back. So they would sell the spent hens to someone, and we'd chop off its head, or Dad would chop off his head, and we'd pluck the feathers, and that's a chicken or a hen for the stew pot. That's when you talk about chicken and dumplings. You sell them fried and old hen. Why am I saying all this? Because I'm talking with a young person, 20-something, who was saying they were going to run to I forget what, fast food, but they wanted chicken fingers. And I remember very quietly saying, well, I'm sure your grandmother has some chicken breast in the freezer. And she turned to me with indignation and said, I don't want chicken breast. I want chicken fingers. And it dawned on me that in this one generation, she was so removed from the knowledge of how do you get chicken fingers. That's simply chicken breast that you've cut in slender little cuts and breaded and fried. And I asked her, do you really think chickens have fingers? And that's what you're buying. You don't know the part of meat that you're eating. Why am I saying all this? Well, now I see these 20-somethings who may not carry the scars or the wounds or the memories that I have. They are having their own experience and doing their own reaction. And my sitting back and watching is just sort of surprised at how similar these reactions are. The good news is they are also taking other tactics. They are not depending on marching in the street. They are not depending on some spokesperson to come and placate them. You know, say, oh, it's going to be all right. Let's pray about it. Let's forgive and forget. Those days, I think, are now over, and they are long overdue to be over. Prejudice, discrimination, and antagonism directed against someone of darker skin based on the belief that one's own race is superior has dominated the behavior of many Americans in the United States for half a century or more. And despite discrediting most of the scientific effort to elevate one race over another, and this is kind of the aristocratic belief, and a lot of white families in the South copied the British aristocratic structure And this was part of the perpetuation of that concept. There are some now in the 21st century who would like to continue that strata. They want it to be made clear that if you are of light complexion, light colored eyes, you are by genetic making better than those who are not of that complexion and do not have that color eyes. So whenever that was put into the most horrendous action was during the Holocaust, when Hitler went after the Jewish people. But recently on Facebook, I was reading how there has been an Austrian person who's killed more African people than were killed during the Nazi Holocaust against the Jews, and there is no outcry. No one has tagged this particular person as being as horrible as Hitler, although his crimes are equal to, and by some counting numbers of bodies, greater than that which the Jewish people maintain a very strong vigil that you have to know this has happened to them. You have to know that we are people that have been maligned and aggressively persecuted. And I stand back and say, guess what? So am I. And I don't have to go across the ocean to Africa. I can stay right here in these United States. And I've lived more than half a century, and I certainly have stories to support what I have just stated. Recent news headlines have uncovered the smothering hatred that everyday white Americans have for non-white Americans living in the United States. I mentioned to you on November 4th in Applebee's, a restaurant. You're sitting there thinking, you know, there's no longer, I know in North Carolina you couldn't sit at the fountain and order a milkshake when you were in Greensboro, North Carolina, and a lot of college kids from A&T University, and I'm sure other universities whose name I'm not calling, sat there on the bench and was snatched off those benches and watered and put in jail because they were sitting where they weren't supposed to at that time. Although the place would take your money and give you food, you couldn't stay and sit and enjoy your food. Well, guess what? Here we are, 2015, as recent as November 4th, a lady sitting in a booth talking to her family was assaulted. Someone in an adjacent booth became somehow extremely irate that the language she was hearing wasn't English. And so she assaulted the person with a large beer mug. And like I said, Facebook posted pictures of how badly the lady's lower lip was cut, nose was cut, and she's had numerous stitches, may have a need for plastic surgery, because the white female listening came across from behind and literally bashed the lady in the face because she wasn't speaking English. I don't even know how to address that. I have nothing to say. I think it speaks for itself. It's just hearing someone else speak a language you don't know creates that kind of rage. I think that rage was already there. I don't think the thing you're identifying as the problem is the problem. I think it's that there was a black person or persons in a eating facility, and that made this particular person irate, and then that their difference, the language difference, just heightened that overall difference, and it exploded into her rage. I would be very curious to see what the penalties are here in the United States for such an unprovoked, thug-like, aggressive attack. I didn't hear any kind of labels put on this lady's actions. They explained it quickly. Well, she was upset because. And that was it. So I don't know if Applebee's had a comment or at all, or if it was anything significant to them. But I put that out as evidence that there is a smothering hatred that's in everyday white America. So then you say, well, she's one person, and it's a small town. You can't really do that. Well, let's talk about something that's not small. I listened to the presidential candidate, Donald Trump, and he is stating without any reservations whatsoever that if he were president to get rid of these aliens, he would build a wall around the perimeters of the United States and Mexico and stop all these illegal Mexicans from coming in, and he'd round up all of these illegals and ship them back to Mexico. And I listen to that and I just grow cold. I mean, how many years did it take before the wall in Germany came down? I mean, what kind of atrocities, you know, the horror. Look at the Gaza Strip, how they keep putting the fence up and shooting people down, and they just take turns of killing this and bombing this and killing this and bombing this, all under the concept of this is mine and not yours. The earth is a single earth, and we are really a single people. And to have someone who is a billionaire, and the key here is has the money and the connections. That's the frightening thing. I don't see him as a man. I fear the money he holds. And I truly hope that the fledgling 20-something black Americans who are now starting to shake and say, this is enough. You know, if you ever watch a dog that gets wet, when it first walks out of the water, it kind of pauses, and then it starts to shake itself. And depending on the size of the dog and the level of wetness and the level of intolerance, you can see some mighty shaking, and water just goes everywhere. Well, this is the image in my mind when I see my 20-somethings pecking on the inside of that egg about to get born. And I hope I don't recognize what comes out of the eggs. I hope I don't have deja vu. I hope they come out in a new breed with new ideas and new approaches. I hope those who know the internet use internet. And those who know how to manipulate finances manipulate finances. And those who know how to do a worldwide integration of unity will put that in place. Because one of the problems that I know I experienced when I was part of that problem, the movement, it was communication. That we could be so easily contained if you could not afford an airfare or if you could not catch a bus. Mobility was difficult. So many of our marches was on foot. We'd either walk many miles and be in the street, and it was mainly because we didn't have control of the newspapers, we didn't have control of TV, we didn't have control of radio. If you know your history, a number of black dominant towns were burned down or shut down. It always makes me stop and think, how many of you know that the Arlington Cemetery was land taken from a black American town called Freetown? Freetown had about 900 people in population when it was decided that land would be confiscated. And once the land was confiscated, they turned it into a national cemetery. So even burying the dead and seeing the president do his due diligence in the honor of the dead, it can't help but bring back to me atrocity against black Americans. Why take their town and not give them any kind of remediation? It's a reminder when I see the white crosses that spans across those grounds, the image of the fallen veteran is bad enough, but it also has an image to me of fallen black Americans who have never been identified, who have never been thanked for their efforts, who, if possible, is buried under some history. We're not included in the stories that get told. Okay, so presidential candidate Donald Trump, you would build a wall around the borders of these United States. I don't know how that's any different than what people in Waco was doing when they were creating their own religious cult. There's a breakdown in trust between black community leaders, ministers, athletic coaches, and some of the parents with young black people because they don't have the trust anymore. They really don't believe that whatever it is that you say you're going to do is going to happen. And I certainly applaud. I feel so excited to see the young people at Yale standing up and saying, we've had enough, and if you're going to bring somebody else in. We're going to select them, and I understand they have an acting dean coming in. I saw a picture of him. He didn't look very black to me, but they said he is a black American, and that if you look at the things he has done, you'll see that he at one time was at the university, and he did do some things for the school and black young men as well as women's studies, from what I understand. So I applaud you, my football-playing friends in Missouri. I applaud you, my young 20-somethings who are starting to wake up, and I am so excited, can hardly wait to see what comes out of the egg. But I welcome you, and if there's anything I can do to help you, please let me know. And with that, I thank you so much for listening, and until next time, take care.